Hello, and welcome to the Burning Issue podcast. My name is Luke Walsh, and I'm the editor of the news website, endswasteandbioenergy.com. In this podcast, I've been looking at how the UK treats its black bag waste. That's the rubbish you can't recycle that has in the past gone to landfill sites. In more recent years, it has been increasingly sent to energy from waste plants, which, while not a perfect solution, is definitely a step up from landfilling. However, in the UK, we're getting to a position where EFW capacity is catching up with waste production, and with costs for developing facilities increasing dramatically, there's been a slowdown in development of new plants in the UK. But while the UK's production of waste changes, there's always going to be waste that cannot be recycled, and it's going to have to go somewhere. So for this episode, I'm speaking with one of the businesses doing something different with waste. Waste Not Energy's chief executive, Ian Jones, has literally turned around a business which has developed a waste-to-pellet facility in Middlesbrough and has plans for at least two more sites currently. It's also exporting increasing volumes of its pellets to off-takers. So let's hear what Ian has to say. Hello, Ian. Thank you for joining me.
Great to be here, Luke. It's my first podcast. So whilst I've been a regular listener, I've not been a regular participant. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Thank you for having me.
We always like someone that's a listener as well, so thank you very much for that. In the intro, I've just tried to explain what Waste Not Energy does, but can you explain the company's purpose in your own words?
Yeah, it's always an interesting one when you're asked to describe a pelletising business and what people imagine it is. But Waste Not Energy was set up to develop an alternative fuel, predominantly to replace coal in heavy industry. And that's what we set out to do, and that's what we're currently achieving. It is a product that has been homogenised, stabilised and optimised to achieve the right specification, but it's also cleaned, it's dried, it's easier to store. So that's what Waste Not Energy was set up to do.
I understand all of that, and you use solid recovered fuel to create your pellets, but the waste sector is arguably shifting away from producing SRF to the cheaper refuse-derived fuel. Could that be a problem for your production in the longer term?
No, I don't think so. I think you're right. You know, historically, going back, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, there has been a shift away from using SRF, mainly because the cost of producing the SRF from RDF was more difficult. And the export market was more interested in having the, you know, the low-grade RDF that they can just chuck in the burners for EFW purposes. The SRF market over the last 18 months has actually made a bit of a bounce back domestically. There are more people actually entering the SRF market. At the moment, we're not seeing any issues with SRF. In fact, I get contacted almost daily with people who are making SRF looking to offload it. So I think that's been helped mainly in this country by the decline or the slowdown of the cement industry, who were big users of the SRF. I think there are more people entering the market and more interested in further refining RDF and making sure that the recyclables are taken out of the RDF and that the SRF that you're left with is actually the better quality, less recyclable product left in it.
No, that sounds really positive. You've marketed the pellet so far as solid improved recovered fuel, but we've spoken in the past and you said you were considering a bit of a rebrand. Can you say, is there any progress on that?
There is actually, Luke, because I know we've talked about this in the past. And initially some of the feedback from people in the industry when we've branded it as SIRF have been, well, you know, what are they talking about and what does that mean? How can you further improve it and all the rest of it? And there was a few raised eyebrows and snooty noses with regards to that as a brand. But actually, the more people that I've brought to site, the more customers, the more regulators, the more suppliers, and have actually seen what we do with regards to taking your bog standard SRF that gets used everywhere and then making sure all the glass, the metals, the heavies, the rigid plastics, the vapes, the golf balls and all the rest of it that comes in there is taken out. And then we take out all of the moisture out of it. So instead of it arriving at your site at 20% moisture, we take it down to below 5%. So with all of those things coming out of it, everybody then turns around and says, well, I can see how it is a solid, improved, recovered fuel and not just an SRF. And on that basis, I've decided that I'll probably stick with the SIRF, and it's our job to educate and not to try and change to appease one or two naysayers in the industry.
Hopefully they can listen to this and they'll understand more then.
I expect there's still to be a few more raised eyebrows after listening to this, Luke, but we'll see.
You mentioned earlier the slowdown in cement producing plants. Now, I think your traditional market isn't the EFW sector. It's more heavy industries like that. If cement plants are slowing down, where do you see the off-takers coming?
Traditionally, the cement plants were a target for a number of reasons. First of all, they were the people that had the permit because they've been part of the waste solution for quite a long time. as they have slowed down, we know that there are other markets out there for this product. But again, it takes a longer period of time for us to develop those. The steel industry is looking at using waste solutions. The power industry is looking at using waste solutions. Even the EFWs are looking at the pellet as a potential for them to use when their feedstock isn't stable or there isn't enough volume of it. They switch back to gas, which affects their ESG scoring, their carbon reporting, and the whole reason they were set up. Whereas if they can still use a waste that's cheaper and cleaner than gas, then this might be an alternative for them. It's not just the cement industry in the UK that we're relying on here. I mean, we're set up to export anyway. That's the reason why we're based at the Port of Middlesbrough. And we see other countries where cement is prevalent, the likes of Turkey, currently can't take waste. But as that market starts to slowly open up, you know, that would be a great new opportunity for the cement industry in that country.
Now, I have to ask you, the waste pellet sector, it's faced some criticism, and it's faced criticism on this podcast with Mark from Andusia saying he can't see a market for it in the long term. I'm guessing you disagree, and while he didn't name you specifically, I think it's only fair to maybe give you the right of reply on behalf of the sector.
I appreciate that. I think from Mark's perspective, he's probably right, right? I mean, if you're trading, if you're brokering RDF out to EFWs and they're being paid a gate fee to take your product, it's quite difficult when you're not ensconced in the market to actually to say, well, I can't see how this is going to replace RDF in these EFWs or in these cement kilns. And I think he's right. We're not designed to replace RDF in those industries or in those markets. I think the pellet is a much more of a technical sale. It's not a brokered product. It's not a volume of baled product that people can just chuck in. It's much more about how the more technical industries can replace their coal with a more substantial product that works for them, and obviously a much cleaner product, because the pellet does burn at a 4 or 5 times less CO2 than coal. There is a European requirement, I think, for all of the heavy industry to use a lot less coal by 2028 that's coming. And that's where our focus is. I think maybe as Mark is not in that sort of technical sales arena, that's why he's not necessarily having those conversations. But yeah, I mean, as an outsider looking in, you'd say, well, the pellet's not going to replace RDF. And Mark's right. But the pellet is designed to replace coal, and I think that's where it's heading.
I understand your explanation of the industry and how Andusia and you work in different sectors. But I guess overall, you're both after the same feedstock, aren't you, in a way? So is there a bit of a friendly rivalry there?
I don't think so, no. I think there's, at the moment, while the UK is a net exporter, you know, that's very much Andusia's market. We don't come across them. We're not competing for feedstock on that basis. I think they've got their supply chain well secured, as have we. I don't see there being any rivalry, but whatever we do have is relatively friendly. So, yeah, I very much intend to keep it that way.
You were kind enough to show me around your plant last November, and this was as you were about to ship your first pellets, which you've just touched on earlier. How's that gone, and are there any updates you can talk about it now?
It went incredibly well. It was the final part of the completing the initial commissioning of our plant, which was to fully test our storage facility, which is at the AV Dawson port in Middlesbrough, but also the loading of the ship and the vessel and that whole process as to how you do it, how long it takes and how you can manage it. As I say, it went particularly well. We loaded an 8,000 ton vessel. We had the storage facility at Middlesbrough is capable of holding 15,000 tons of product. That's what it's permitted to hold. And the EA actually came and watched us and witnessed the loading of the vessel so that they could see with regards to dust and odour and potential river pollution to ensure that it was being done properly. They spent, you know, quite a period of time there making sure that everything was okay, and they left fortunately very happy. You know, the product loaded very well onto the vessel. The vessel set sail, it arrived on time at our customer's port. It was unloaded within 27 hours, which was a fantastic result. The product has been used with no problems, and I'm happy to say I took a visit out there to see the customer, to see the product being used. They've since ordered an additional 3 vessels for this year. So from a trial to actually getting increased volumes through the door for 2024 is great news for us.
Yeah, it sounds very positive. And I think you were quite modest there as well, because I believe the EA did actually give you quite a good report, as you're one of the first people to be doing this. Could you explain a bit more about that?
We've developed quite a good working relationship with the EA over the last few years. Our own internal policy is to remain audit ready at all times. So that's to do with the whole cleanliness of the site, how we manage all of our feedstock, how we manage our storage and, you know, and the whole production facility in, as well. And the EA have been part of helping us do that in the most responsible way. So we've appreciated the feedback that they've given us in the past. We've taken actions when they've made suggestions, we've implemented them, and I think they can see, you know, that we are a willing partner. I think they have a very difficult job at the moment, the EA, and maybe we can touch on that, you know, a little bit further down the line. But they turned up on site to do a spot audit unannounced. They were 4 hours on site with us, and we left with a zero score on the car report. So for a fledgling business, we take great pride in making sure that the EA are a partner as we go through this process. And I think more importantly, what we're trying to get the EA to see is that the product that we produce is not the same as the 1912 Tenet gets exported under. It is stable, it is less odorous, it is less dusty, and if managed properly, it is a better environmentally sound way of moving waste. We'll see how that develops.
One of the most interesting things I saw on your site was, while it's very energy intensive, you've mitigated that by signing a deal with a biogas plant nearby to supply power. How did that come about?
We're close to signing the deal, Luke. It's okay. We're still going through the feasibility study. I wish I was here saying we've signed it and it's all done, but there's a lot. It's quite a technical, difficult, complex process. Believe it or not, it's not made easy at the moment to be able to take a green energy source unless it's been designed that way from the offset. We are in protracted discussions, conversations, and as I say, the feasibility study is ongoing with a look to not only receive the electricity but also synthetic gas to be able to completely support the decarbonisation of the manufacturing of this product, which is important to us. We're very excited about being able to implement that, hopefully by the end of this year.
As you said, I guess that adds to the pellet's environmental credentials, doesn't it? Because it supports other companies' ESG requirements when you can say that they've been produced using renewable power.
Absolutely. You know, the way that the ESG scoring works, third-party ESG scoring works, is that we have to declare the CO2 footprint. The lower that is, the better it is for everybody involved. Absolutely. I think it's an initiative that we're very focused on trying to achieve. You know, and I anticipate that our CO2 footprint would be almost zero by the time we implement it.
Well, that's definitely something to aim to, isn't it? We've talked about everything that's going well at the Middlesbrough plant now, but it was perhaps more of a trouble facility when you came in. You've turned it around now, but I bet you've got a few more grey hairs.
There's no doubt about that. It's not been an easy project, right? Perhaps in everybody's naivety, everybody expects that to pelletise something, it's easy, isn't it? It's straightforward. We have a lot of customers saying, oh yeah, we're thinking of putting pelletisers on our front end and we're going to pelletise our feedstock. It's a lot more complex, right? And it's a lot more difficult than anybody imagines. And that's the nature of the waste itself, changes on an hourly basis. And therefore, your process and how you adapt your process changes on an almost hourly basis. It's not like you're pelletising a homogenous feedstock, like grain or straw, or the abrasiveness of waste, the nature of waste changes all the time, and therefore pelletizing it is incredibly difficult. I sort of imagined it would be a relatively straightforward extrusion process, which I'd worked in many manufacturing plants in the past and thought, well, it can't be that hard. It's not straightforward. And the project itself had numerous problems, from trying to start something up in COVID and workforce and how to manage throughout a COVID process with time and cost just increasing all the time. It wasn't straightforward. The original designer of the plant no longer with us. We've had to adopt all the design, bring in different contractors to help and support us. But despite all of that, the plant is up and running. It's producing. More importantly, it's operating at the rate that we need it to be a sustainable business long term.
Everything you've achieved and then throw in a global pandemic on top. Not bad going. I wanted to ask you, the waste to pellet sector, you've sort of touched upon how people think they can do it, but it's remained a niche sector, perhaps even more so since EcoPower went bust, as it's only really you and N+P doing it. Is it that it's actually, like you said, much harder to get into, or will more people get into it?
Yes, more people will get into it. EcoPower were sort of pioneers, certainly in the UK. N+P had already established themselves over in Holland with the acquisition of Subcoal from DSM. They were anticipating building out the capacity of this market a long time ago. There are other people pelletising waste now, more and more. I think there's a new pelletising plant just being commissioned in Germany at the moment. And again, they're working much more on the technical side of the feedstock replacement with some of the chemical plants and lime kiln plants within Europe. So at the moment, I think there is definitely a market for the pellet. The problem is, does the pelletising industry have the capacity to meet future demand? you know, if you're a 7 million ton user of coal, or you need to be able to replace that, and a 250,000 ton or 100,000 ton plant is only going to tickle the sides. And I think that's where we're headed. We're building this one. I think M plus P have got plans to build at least two more in Europe. The Germans are starting to build them out. The capacity is coming, and that will give the market confidence to start switching away from the coal and gas that it has historically used.
When Waste Not Energy first started, there were plans for several facilities around the UK. You've sort of slowed that down as you developed the Middlesbrough one. But from what you've just said there, does that indicate maybe you might be coming back to more plants?
Very much so. We did the right thing for the business to slow things down, because this is a developing market. You're bringing a relatively new product to market. The technical lead time with working with partners between when they adapt their process to be able to take your product isn't something that happens overnight. Rushing to build capacity without an offtake is not very sensible business. So yes, we did slow things down, but that is changing. There are more people needing to have more capacity and more certainty around the future of the pelletizing industry. So it's going to be very much a case of watch this space. We are constantly now working, searching and looking for where is sites 2 and 3 going to be.
2 and 3.
I think the original plan you keep referring to, Luke, said 8. So sort of scale that back. Well, I think we need to grow in accordance with market demand and market requirement. And that's what we're aiming to do.
We've talked about the sustainability aspect. I've known you talk about Drax in the past, which, for anyone who doesn't know, is a formerly coal-fired plant that is converted to biomass sourced from North America. You've said in the past Drax should be forced to look at using more domestic feedstocks. Now, Drax does subscribe to this site if you want to pitch to them.
I haven't spoken to Drax for a while. I think they have a policy at the moment. 19-12-10 is not in their lexicon of future products that they want to put into their boiler system. Those systems can be adapted. Those systems can be changed. They've done it already from coal, so there's no reason why they couldn't do it. Drax is a pelletizing company as well, right? Drax has its own pelletizers. It pelletizes biomass overseas and then ships it. And I think that the waste pellet has a role to play at Drax. Drax don't yet agree with me. I think that's well within their right not to. As we build out the capacity, we as a waste pelletizing sector will have the capacity to be able to support them. They take 7 million tons of virgin white wood pellets. Even if you could only replace 700,000 tons of that, that might enable them to focus more on the sustainability of their biomass and less scrabbling around and making mistakes in the process of looking at the unsustainable stuff. Mistakes happen no matter how good their policies are, and that's, I think, is what they're subject to. If they can replace 10% of their virgin biomass with a waste biomass product that ourselves, M plus B and others will be able to produce, I see no reason why it couldn't be part of the solution. It's not the answer. It's not the total answer, but it could be part of the solution, as it could be for a lot of the other waste, wood and virgin biomass pelletizing boilers in this country. We don't ever anticipate being able to replace it all, but we could be part of their solution. It's cheaper. It's just as clean. It's on their doorstep. It doesn't make sense not to consider it.
I agree.
And I think that's where the government policy at the moment of paying the, you know, the rocks for the 100% biomass product is preventing people from looking at other alternatives. If they supported it in the same way and ensured that for a period of time that it was supported with the subsidy in the same way, I think you'd see a shift tomorrow. That's just my opinion.
I don't think we're going to see any more coal to biomass conversions, well, simply because there isn't the coal capacity in the UK anymore. There was a brief push to make Uxmouth a waste-fired plant. That didn't go through. M plus P were going to supply pellets to it. Can you see the possibility of any more conversion projects, either in the UK or Europe?
I don't see why not. I think, you know, the biomass market is finite. Despite what everybody keeps saying, if you grow certain trees, they can grow quicker. And if you only use those trees, you know, but Scandinavian governments have just announced that they are restricting the amount of forestry that they are now using or will allow to use in the future. And the product must stay at home and must not be exported. It must be used for home use. All of these different things, Luke, I think we will see some more conversions. I think Uxmouth was a lack of foresight by the Welsh government with regards to embracing the future. Maybe it was too big a scale. It could have been scaled down a little bit. But that, you know, not taking a leap of faith and not trying these things for me is unforgivable. I think it was based on poor policy. I think it was based on lack of ambition to decarbonise effectively in the future. I hope that that will change. It's changing in Europe, where the European governments have a greater need for heat and power to come from sustainable sources. They are advancing much more rapidly. We are, I think, not embracing that fast enough and not investing correctly in the right projects.
You've made a strong statement about policy there. Obviously, we're looking at an election this year and the polls currently show a likely change of parties. Do you see a more focus on waste from upcoming policy?
No, I'm not a politician, fortunately. You know, my understanding, and from what I can see at the moment, there's nothing clear coming from what we're all assuming will be the new government, apart from the fact that they've backtracked on their $28 billion potential investment, which is already a disappointing start for those of us that are in the sector. The agencies that we have to work with, you know, they're consistent, doesn't matter who's in power. You know, the EA, BASE, DEFRA, these guys are the people that determine the right policies for the government. The government needs to provide a framework for them to be more successful. They need to support them better. They need to enable these people to operate and the staff there to operate in a more conducive environment to what they have been doing. You know, I think the EA have been out on strike this year. DEFRA are struggling to get any traction. There's a number of changes at senior levels all the time, because there's a lot expected of them with very little resource. And until we change that policy, then it doesn't matter which government we get in. I don't see things changing.
I think you're arguing there that you want to see the EA better funded because, like you say, there's been strikes and staff have said they can earn much more in the private sector. So why work?
Absolutely. I think it was on one of your previous podcasts, I think Tony from TOTUS, who actually said, you know, the EA have recruited young, bright, smart graduates that are coming in, starting to work, but the ability for them to have an impact takes time. That is going to take some time. I think they need to focus as much on retention as they are on recruitment. Easier said than done in an environment where people are struggling and don't feel supported. That takes real leadership from the top to make that happen. It doesn't happen overnight. And I think we as an industry need to work with the EA better. I think we can be more supportive and more helpful by actually doing what we're supposed to do and making their life a bit easier. Maybe that's an approach.
Sounds good to me. Basically, we've come to the end of the podcast now. But the last question I ask everyone is, what's the question I should have asked you? And more importantly, how would you have answered it?
I've heard you ask this of people, and it's a good one. It's always interesting to hear what everyone says. I mean, I think that the one critical part of what's happening in the EFW, the waste, the alternative fuel, the whole sector is around the investment, let's say, outlook, how these things are invested in and the type of investors that are putting the money in to move forward. It's a different beast, I think, from an investment perspective. There is no rapid payback anymore on these projects. There's no quick win. There's no cash cow in the short term that you can build it cheap and flip it fast. The build costs of all of these things have almost tripled over the last 3 years since COVID. So the investment cost is much higher. And I think investors need to take a different approach with these projects in the future. It's a longer term investment now. The payback is going to be slower. I think the mindset of the investors needs to be prevalent, I think, when making the investment decisions, that this is a longer term investment. We need to build quality. We need to build it sustainably. And we need to build them with the future markets in mind. How do we do this better for a future generation? And that's when the money will come. If you were to invest your own money, you'd want it back at some point, right? So that mentality exists, whether you're a bank or whether you're an individual. I just think that there needs to be that change in mindset with investors going forward on projects. And I think WasteNot's been very fortunate with the Sustainable Infrastructure Fund at Gresham House that have enabled us to have that long-term outlook that we're building for the future and we're not building for today.
Oh, I think that is a good way to end it. I agree with you because I think there's a lot of energy from waste projects that are stuck and they haven't gone forward and there's still waste being produced and otherwise it's going to go to landfill.
400 kilos per person in the UK per year is what we currently produce, Luke. And I think there are always going to be better ways for us to recycle, reuse, repurpose. And we have to provide the right policy framework and support and subsidies to enable us to get to the level where we want to be at. I think everybody that I've heard on all of your podcasts in the past have been bought into that, supportive of that. You know, we're out here on a daily basis trying to make that happen, and long may it continue.
Yeah, we're just trying to spread the word.
Indeed.
Thank you very much, Ian.
You're most welcome, Luke. Great to speak to you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. All that's left for me to say is thank you very much for listening. If you've liked what you've heard, please share it amongst your networks, either online or in person. It's all really appreciated. And if you want to learn more about the business of energy recovery, go to the website endswasteandbioenergy.com, where you can sign up for our free newsletters or even take out a subscription, if you want. Goodbye.